about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there.
Our brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. And you don't have any idea why we're doing so smart. Most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal. Almost anyone who talks to me has the following experience. About 4 minutes in, they realize that almost anything would be preferable to this particular conversation. I'm Art Markman.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and this is Two Guys on Your Head. Made possible in part by Lakeway Regional Medical Center, providing comprehensive care for complex brain and spine conditions. Today, how to exit conversations.
What I think makes this challenging is that when you're talking to people who are clearly interested in conveying something to you and you want them, you know, you're a polite person and you want to hear them out, but yet there's a point at which you decide, I have to bring this to a close. You have to interject. And sometimes you have to interject when somebody hasn't finished entirely the thought that they're about to make.
And it's difficult because when you're face to face with somebody, the assumption is that you're goal at that moment and their goal at that moment is to be engaged in this conversation. And so at the moment where one of those person's goals is to no longer be involved in that conversation, it can be insulting if the other one doesn't share that goal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's much easier to do when you're not face to face with someone, but when you're standing right there and you can see the look on their face and how enthusiastic they are about the conversation. You know, people try to give cues. I mean, of course, your first step is not to overtly say anything, but, you know, to check your watch or fidget a little or yawn really loudly. Maybe not that. But, you know, we send cues. I mean, there's, you know, people think conversations involve a speaker and a listener, and the speaker's doing the speaking and the listener is just listening. But in fact, we're constantly giving what's called back channel feedback about communication. So we nod, you know, we look at the person as they're speaking to us. We try to look engaged. And presumably at the point where the conversation is going astray, there's back channel feedback you begin to give, like pacing or
texting someone else.
Right. And the hope is that the person on the other end of this conversation is sensitive to those cues, but that does, it's just not always the case.
And I basically you just hit on what this whole thing is about. It's not the matter of it being a difficult conversation. I think if we finish the sentence, it'd be a difficult conversation to bring to an end, because the person we're having a conversation with doesn't read cues effectively. I mean, there sometimes someone's in my office and they're sitting across the desk from me and we're having a conversation. I'm thinking, okay, this, we need to end now. All I have to do is look at my desktop. And many people say, look, okay, I don't want to take any more of your time. And they excuse themselves and go. Other people, I might have to move a paper on my desk or something. And then that gets them to say that. Other people, I have to actually stand up. And they say, well, I can see you know, you're busy. And
I'll be here when you get back.
And other people, I actually have to walk to the door. And so it varies with all of that. And when people aren't reading cues, I think most of us are unpracticed in giving more deliberate signals that this is coming to an end. So that's not in our repertoire. I mean, if you're a kind person and you want to be polite, you're not used to saying things that make it explicitly clear that I have to go now and we can't talk anymore. Yeah. And even just saying those words is uncomfortable for some people, understandably so, because we're generally not practiced at that, because we tend to choose to be around people when we have a choice who respond to the cues that we expect people to respond to, right? So if we have people who you never can get a word in edgewise and they're not interested in what you think, if we have a choice, we don't spend time with those people, right? But the people that we do spend time with, well, we expect them to read our cues, our back channel feedback, as Art's saying, and then respond to that as we respond to theirs. But it's difficult when we encounter somebody who doesn't actually read those cues well and is not adept at deciding for themselves when someone is ready to stop talking. Right.
And if you're an agreeable sort of person, then part of what agreeableness is all about is you want people to like you in that moment. And the moment that you choose to end a conversation that the other person thought was going swimmingly, because they won't shut up, to stop them and to end that conversation is awkward and creates at least a moment in which that person may not love you in that moment. And so agreeable people will just allow that conversation to go on despite the fact that they're getting increasingly agitated about the fact that they have something else to do. And this becomes a particular problem, not just in interpersonal two-person conversations, but when there's a group setting of some kind. So one thing that teachers and speakers have to deal with all the time are students or questioners who monopolize the floor. And so, you know, one of the things that speakers and teachers end up having to become more adept at is getting those people to sit down and let you get on with what it was you were trying to do, either because you have a complete lecture you're trying to give that had a point that you were hoping people were going to get, or because you want a wider range of people to engage in the conversation in class. And that also can be a problem for really agreeable people. So a lot of people who go into teaching as a profession, for example, are people. They like to be liked. And it's very hard for a teacher to really, you know, in that moment, tell a student, look, let's you and I pick up on that later. But right now, we need to hear from more people.
And, you know, something that Art said a moment ago about someone who can't get out of the situation or doesn't have the personal repertoire to know how to end this conversation. So you let the other person continue to talk. During that time, you're getting more agitated. You're getting a little frustrated. You're getting a little resentful that this person is not allowing you to leave. But it's worth raising the question, well, whose fault is that? You know, I mean, is it that you could say that person doesn't know how to read my cues and stop? Well, you could also say, and actually you don't have a way of ending this because you're not used to dealing with people who don't read the cues that you usually give. That idea about whose problem it is too easy to give away to the person who's not reading the cues and say, my God, what's wrong with those people? Well, we could ask, what's wrong with us that we haven't practiced a way of dealing with that in a way that makes it more effective?
Next week, we'll talk about the psychology of xenophobia with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. To check out this and other episodes of Two Guys and find more information on any of the topics we've discussed, go to KUT.org. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.